IVM.
Hello and welcome to the Wire Talks. I'm Siddharth Bhatia. Indian family businesses used to be a male-only world. While the sons inherited the business, the women were married off or expected to remain in the background. But things are changing, or so many families claimed. In some cases, the women have taken over the company from their fathers. Even so, the Indian corporate sector remains a male bastion. Only 18% of the directors in listed companies are women. And in some large business organizations, things haven't changed at all. One such is the Murugappa Group, headquartered in Chennai, which comprises 9 public companies, listed companies, and many private organizations and companies. It remains firmly patriarchal. Only male members of the family get to become directors. Women are strictly not allowed. And I may say that this is a company organization which is over a century old. One female member of the family has challenged this and is currently engaged in a battle with her own relatives. Dr. Valli Arunachalam, daughter of the late M.B. Murugappan, who for over 2 decades was the head of the conglomerate, says she should be made a director too. She holds a PhD in nuclear engineering from Texas A&M University and is an expert in semiconductor technology. Has many patents to her credit. Along with her mother and sister, she holds a bit over 8% of the shares and wants the family to allow either to join the business or settle their stake in the family organizations at fair value. Both these options have been summarily ignored and, in fact, from what I gather, dismissed almost unanimously. It's a battle that has wider ramifications, and she's our guest today to discuss what her stand is and why it matters. Dr. Valli Arunachalam, welcome to the Wire Talks.
My pleasure, Siddharth.
Could you succinctly tell us what this fight is all about?
Just in one sentence, it's about gender justice in corporate India.
Yeah, that's a very compelling argument that you have put forward. But even then, could you explain the nitty-gritty of what happened? I know that you inherited the shares after your father passed away, along with your sister and mother. And what should have been, in the normal course of things, a very logical step, one of you gets to sit on the board, didn't happen. So can you just amplify that and tell us what this is?
Sure. I mean, I'll give you perhaps a little background. So the family follows the age-old tradition of patriarchy, where the inheritance goes from fathers to sons. And it's been that way for 122 years now. And I'm challenging the status quo. So far in the entire history of the family, there have only been 2 occasions when there has been no male heir. In one instance, that family branch chose to adopt a son to pass on the inheritance. And then the second instance is my father's case. In my father, he was very progressive in his thinking, and he passed on his entire inheritance to my mother, myself, and my sister. Now, after my father's passing, per his wishes, we approached the family and said that please settle us at fair value and settle us out of the business at fair value. And for over 3 years, we went back and forth. The family said, yes, they would settle us, only to backtrack. And this went on for 3 years. It was going nowhere. And whereas we were very consistent in our approach, we put forward several ways in which they could settle us amicably. And the family just summarily dismissed everything, all the options, without any reason at all. And that's when I asked for representation on the board of the holding company. Now, the board has always been comprised of a representative from each of the Murugappa family branches. And our family branch was represented by my father right up to his passing. So when every family branch had visibility into the business and was contributing to the business, why not our branch of the family after my father? But the board seat was a fight, because first the family said, okay, when I asked for the board seat, they said, okay, you know, you apply for the board seat at the next AGM, which was about 9 months away. I did that. And a nominated board position was unanimously shot down by the entire family. It's rather ironic. They nominate me for board position only to unanimously shoot it down. And this was the turning point, because shooting on what basis? I asked the question, on what basis? When I applied for a board seat, I had adequate, if not more, educational qualifications than any male member when they were inducted to the board. And I had 23 years experience at that time in the semiconductor industry, in Fortune 500 companies such as Motorola, TI, Texas Instruments, IBM, and AMD. So why was it, with those educational qualifications and that breadth of experience, was I not qualified to be on the board of a Murugappa holding company? That is the question I have, and I ask you and your viewers to ponder. The only differentiating factor is that I am a woman.
You know, while you were talking and while I also researched this, what struck me was this refusal, you know, the OMA's rejection of your appeal to your application to sit on the board with all the qualifications and the shareholding. This refusal sounds almost, I'm going to use a strong word, it sounds almost medieval. Now, have you pondered, have you thought about what could be behind this? Is it a fear that the shares you hold will pass on to an outsider, so-called outsider, when you marry? You know, is it something personal? Is it just cussedness? What could it be?
That is, Siddharth, an excellent question to ask the family. And I myself have been puzzled by it. I don't understand it. This is the 21st century. And the Murugappa Group is one of the largest industrial conglomerates in southern India. So they are in businesses ranging from sugar to electric vehicles. They are at the cutting edge of technology. The male members of the family have all been educated abroad. They are doing business with international companies. And yet, it puzzles me how they can be so 18th century when it comes to mindset, when it comes to inclusiveness, women, and boardrooms. It puzzles me.
So you don't have a clear-cut answer why this is happening, but do you think it is good old-fashioned chauvinism?
I don't want to put labels on things. I will just, all I can do is I can speak to my personal experiences and the fact that I'm not able to comprehend that such a thing is happening in the 21st century. And this is what my fight is all about. It is a fight against the oppression of women. It is a fight for gender justice for women in corporate India.
Well, you have called it with me also, but you have called it patriarchal. So it clearly amounts to that.
Yes, sir. The family is patriarchal, yes.
And all along all this, say last 30 years, maybe not before that, no female member whose brother or whose, you know, male elder would have got into the on the board. No sister has objected? Never?
None except me.
So are they, do you think it's something personal? I need to kind of grasp this, because it's all very well to say gender justice and all that kind of thing, but I need to grasp this. You have some of the finest business minds on the boards. You have a successful conglomerate which has gone places. It has got a name. It's in, as you said, everything. And clearly there is strategic thinking. Surely they would want somebody with your background, with your skill sets, to be part of it so that you can contribute. You said EVs. So why would they not take advantage of that instead of blocking you? So is it something personal? I mean, you can say, I don't know. You can always say, I don't know. But surely you must have pinpointed one or two things.
I mean, what I can say is, and this goes for any organization, right? Any company. I think the basis for board representation should be capability and qualifications. And I had both. Why is it that I was not selected to be on the board? I have absolutely no visibility to, because after the vote, there was no rhyme or reason given for that. So how can I comment on something that I'm a scientist, right? And for me, data is king. And I will never make a conclusion based on hypothetical reasoning. If a reason was given to me, of course I would share it with you, but none was given. So therefore, the only thing I can think of that was differentiating was that I'm female.
And so that's enough data, I would think, even though it's factor of one.
I mean, I'll just give you an example, okay, to illustrate this. And I'm talking facts here, okay? So a male cousin of mine was inducted to the same board a couple of months after his father's untimely passing. At that point in time, he was 23 years old, had just completed his graduate studies, had minimal industrial experience, and yet he was able to get on the board. Contrast that to my education and qualifications when I applied to the board. I leave it to the judgment of your audience. I mean, what could be the reason?
Well, suppose you had a younger brother. Mm-hmm. You have a sister, but suppose you had a younger brother. And after your father's passing, he was invited to sit on the board. And he was in a similar position like this other young man, 23-year-old, who's just finished his graduation. Surely the principle would remain the same, that you are the eldest, you are a better qualified, and therefore you should become. In that hypothetical situation, which scientists do not like, but they do use hypothetical situations for experiments, what would your stance be? Would you still say it's a battle for gender justice?
I would say, may the most capable and qualified be considered on merit.
So gender should not matter. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it should be gender blind, right? If you are qualified and capable and you can contribute, and the main thing is, you know, for any business is shareholder value. You want to build shareholder value by getting the best on board. And it should be a meritocracy. And the passport should not be your gender.
Has anything been put to you firstly, or do you think it's because you live abroad?
Why should where you live matter? It's what you bring to the table that matters. I mean, companies like Tata Motors, Air India now, and Maruti, Indigo, they all have CEOs and MDs in some cases who are foreign citizens who live abroad. Why should that matter? And here, you know, in the age of Zoom and air travel, all of that should not matter. And email and cloud computing, all of that shouldn't matter.
You approached after this happened. Did you get in touch with the other directors to ask?
No, I found out about the rejection of my board position from the company website.
Really? There was no word to you, not even a formal letter saying sorry.
None.
But we are not taking you. That's adding insult to injury in a sense.
Yeah, he could say adding salt to the wound. But you know what, Siddharth? I am not one to, when my back is against the wall, I fight harder. And that was the turning point. I was like, what about other women, right? I want other women to have a chance, right? And that's what this fight is about.
Well, not
it is not just about my family. It's about opportunity, equal opportunity for women as long as they want it. I think that's fair.
But not every woman in India is getting rejected for a directorship.
That is true. That is true.
So, in a sense, this is I don't know whether other daughters of patriarchs have reached out to you and talk to you and say, yes, we support you. I don't know. Has that happened?
What I can say is that the support I have received has been humbling. It has come from all segments of society. It has come from both men and women. And they've all urged me to fight on.
You approached the NCLT. What was that about?
So the grounds for the petition was oppression and mismanagement.
No, you went to the company law tribunal and you said that the company is being mismanaged, or you said that you were being rejected personally, or what?
It was on the grounds of oppression mismanagement.
And what did the NCLT's, what was its findings or judgment?
So it has still, believe it or not, it has not yet come to a hearing on merits, because for over a year and a half, the family has been objecting based on, you know, some hyper-technical points. And so it's been, the hearing has got sidetracked into addressing those hyper-technical points, and we haven't yet come to a hearing on merits. But you know, the NCLT eventually, they did rule in our favor, and they accepted our, you know, we submitted another company petition. Well, there were two things. There is the waiver application, because we have less than 10%, and then there's the company petition itself. So the company petition was another version of it was submitted, correcting those hyper-technical objections that the other side had, as well as to bring in certain new information that had surfaced since the old petition was filed, such as, you know, the significant restructuring of the business. That all happened after our first petition was submitted, and all of that had to be included. And then the NCLT accepted our second waiver application and petition, but the other side objected to it. And so NCLT asked them to file a response. And instead of filing a response, they went to the appellate tribunal. And then there it went on. They filed several applications objecting to all kinds of things. I mean, of course, they objected to the NCLT ruling, which allowed our second petition. And then just about a month ago, NCLAT ruled in our favor, and they dismissed all of their applications. So now it's back to NCLT, where the matter has to be heard on merits. And I am finally waiting for the day when the main matter will be argued, which is oppression and mismanagement.
We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the Wire Talks.
Many of these people we are talking about on the board, all of them who voted against taking you on, happen to be our cousins and second cousins. Have you met anybody since, talked to anybody since? What is the situation there?
No, I haven't spoken to anybody.
So it's now a very, very solid cleave, parting of ways, because you are seen as a renegade family, and are you personally too, who's trying to rock the boat. Would you say that is how you're seen?
I can only tell, I cannot speak to how I am perceived. That is something that you have to ask them. But what I can say is what I view this as. I view this as gender, a fight for equality, a fight for gender justice, a fight against oppression. That's how I view this. I am trying to be the change that I want to see in the world. I want to see gender balanced boards. I want to see women going up the pipeline, breaking the glass ceiling. That's what I'm fighting for.
How do you see them, the kids you grew up with?
See who?
Your cousins. You grew up with them.
Yes.
And now they are like this. And of course, your fight is bigger and all that. But how do you see them? How do you think of them? What could they be thinking to say, Malli, no, won't work?
Well, I am completely focused on the agenda, on my agenda. And my agenda is to ensure that this never happens to another woman.
Well, you're fairly diplomatic, I must confess.
There is no, as you know, again, it's my scientific training. You are taught to look for solutions. And that's what I'm doing. I mean, there's what is the point of thinking negatively? Yeah, okay, people behave a certain way. I have no control over that. But what I do have control over is, what is it that I can do? What are the positive? I'm extremely positive in the way I think, right? And what is it? Okay, I've had failures, but I'm not going to be fazed by that. What is it that I can do to positively to change the status quo? That's what it's all about. I cannot afford negativity.
Tell me, is this... Because this may be viewed as a kind of slightly stereotypical question, but there is a lot of writing on this, etc. Are the Chettiars very, very patriarchal in any case?
See, I don't, again, like to put labels on communities. I don't think that's fair. I know a lot of Chettiar families that have incorporated both sons and daughters in key decision-making roles, whether it be in the family, whether it be in the business. And there are many women in the Chettiar community that have done very well for themselves.
In the business world.
In the business world. You know, and also in terms of promoting culture, they have a lot of talents. And if we go back to the days, you know, of my grandfather and great-grandfather who went off overseas to Myanmar to do business. It's the women that held fort, right? And that requires a lot of management skills.
Yeah, but I'm thinking purely in terms of a daughter, a female member being brought onto the board or handed over a company to say, you run it. Of course, I know there are examples. But, you know, sitting far away, please try to understand what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to dig you for any kind of gossip. What I'm trying to do is to make sense out of something that makes no sense to me. It just doesn't make any sense that a company as large as this, house as well known as this, and so successful. I think the turnover must be in the billions of dollars, even of the listed companies, which is making inroads elsewhere, which is showing signs which are so out of touch with what the world is today. So for me sitting here, I'm in Mumbai, or to anybody else sitting far away, this would just not make any sense. So I know that you are saying it's a fight for bigger justice and all that, and you don't want to speculate. Fair enough. And I won't push you. But I'm just completely this, and I'm looking for some guidance from you to say, because you have said that they are socially regressive. You have said that they are in the Murugappa group is in the 18th century. All that I understand. But in concrete terms, it just doesn't make sense. Well, do you acknowledge at least to, and it may happen well with you also, because you're a woman who is working in the United States and successful, and women are running companies. And this is a debate that is in front of all of us at the moment.
Yeah.
So do you acknowledge that this could be mystifying?
It is. I'm totally mystified, totally puzzled. I mean, I'll throw another data point at you. 18 daughters, 4 generations. Not one daughter has been able to get her foot in the door of the Murugappa business.
Not even in the last 25 years.
In the last 122 years.
So clearly there is something outlier, as they would say. About yes. This particular
now group. You're talking my language.
Yes.
Outlier.
I know. So there is always the exception that makes the rule. So, I mean, they have not spoken to the press. I looked and looked and looked, and I would have been happy to talk to them also, but they have not spoken. I personally think your forays into the media would definitely have an impact of some sort. Now I'm talking like a media person, and something has to break. Now, NCLT, of course, is a very important thing. I think you said somewhere, if I'm not mistaken, Mali, that you are ready to go to the Supreme Court. Did you actually?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. If it requires, of course, I am committed to this fight 200%, and I will go all the way.
What does your family think of it? Your sister and your mother, are they totally with you on this?
My mother unfortunately passed away.
Sorry to hear that.
She was a huge pillar of support. I mean, even though she belonged to a generation past, she, like my father, was very forward thinking. And that was a big blow to us. But yeah, we keep going.
One last question, which, because we are focused on the directorship, why wouldn't they give you fair value? Because that should be easy.
Yes. In fact, like I told you, we proposed, it's not like we were asking for it like right all at once. You know, we proposed many ways in which that they could settle the matter, including mediation. But to all of them, it was just no reason given, just a flat out no. And that again is really puzzling.
Because
and that too, that was what my father wanted, that we be settled at fair value from the business. And for someone who had contributed decades to the growth of the business, who had done so much personally for the family. I mean, there were several of my uncles that passed away at a young age. And my father stepped in as a father figure for their sons and daughters. And so it was shocking to me that the family wouldn't take care of the kith and kin of my father, who had done so much for every one of them personally. I mean, the Murugappa group prides itself in ethics and good governance. But what do these actions reflect when you can't take care of your own kith and kin, when you cannot respect the last wishes of your own uncle or cousin?
Yeah, a lot of questions you have raised today that demand some thinking. Chief among them is, of course, the inexplicable actions of people who... Sorry, you were about to say something?
When you were talking about inexplicable actions, it's not just actions, it's also words, Siddharth. And, you know, I want to make sure that I actually state that, you know, the family has in public made statements, and these are senior members of the family have made statements in public, and I say within quotes, we keep the women out of the business.
So there is no ambiguity there?
No. These are public statements. Okay. And another one, we need to manage the family as a communist and business as a capitalist. Ultimately, it is a fine balancing act between legitimacy and meritocracy. And you can put this in the context of my qualifications and experience versus the qualifications of some of the young cousins of mine who got on the board in their 20s with very little experience. I fail to understand the legitimacy and meritocracy, right? And then another instance, you know, when asked about the group's policy of not allowing women of the family in managerial roles, a senior member of the family publicly endorsed the rule and added, and this is within quotes, "In fact, I'm happy to say that in this generation, we have 11 male members and only one woman." I'll let you and your listeners judge these public statements.
Yeah, well, all I can say is at some level, I'm quite aghast that people can make statements like this.
I mean, these are the titans of South Indian business. There is a certain gravitas and responsibility that comes with that. And to me, as a woman, when I hear these kinds of comments, it is shocking. It is saddening that in this day and age, you can presently go out and in the public make statements like that.
Yeah, again,
and that's why I'm out there to change.
No, now it kind of, with this, it kind of falls into some kind of wider context too. So it is a matter of, shall I say, principle, a perverted principle, but certainly a principle with this organization and the family. So thank you for giving us such clarity on what your issue is about. And as you have repeatedly said, your issue is important, but the actual talk about or discussion should be about opportunities for women when they are qualified, better qualified, which does not always happen. Though I must, as I said in the beginning, even in the corporate sector, some changes are happening. With this, thank you for, once again, thank you for joining us. That was.
So may I say one last thing, Siddharth?
Yes.
Yeah. To all your viewers, I want to say the reason for this fight is because I hope to inspire women so they can achieve their dreams without being set back by patriarchal mindsets. And in the larger sense, you know, this is good for India, for both men and women to be part of India's growth story. And it is only when they both contribute can India's economic engine go on high gear, and can we move from the fifth largest economy to the largest economy in the world.
Well said. So once again, as I was saying, I thank you very much, Dr. Valli Arunachalam, a nuclear scientist now fighting for her gender rights.
I hope my conversations are keeping you updated on what's happening in India and the rest of the world. Along with The Wire, where you can listen to my show, you can also listen to it on IBM Networks, Audible, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Wink Music, Spotify, and Listen Notes, a wide spectrum of platforms where The Wire Talks plays every week.
We will be back next week with another guest. Till then, from me and the rest of the Wire Talks team, thank you, and please join us again. And meanwhile, a very happy Diwali to all of you.